Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back. I'm Nancy Solomon from the WNYC Newsroom and host of the podcast Dead End, filling in for Brian today. Immediately following the election of President Donald Trump in 2016, suburban women began organizing against him. There was the Women's March on Washington the day after Trump's inauguration. And if they hadn't started one already, many of the women who marched then returned home and formed local organizations. They began protesting at local Republican offices and started gearing up for the 2018 midterm elections. It's been 5 years, and now some of the Democratic congresspeople who benefited from that blue wave are in danger of losing their seats. I covered that social movement in 2017 and 2018, and I've been wondering how it's going in this post-Trump world and what it means for the upcoming midterm elections this November. Listeners, did you get involved with politics either for the first time or after a long absence in response to the election of Donald Trump? What got you involved and what was your experience like? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet at us at Brian Lehrer. We're joined now by two of those activists from New Jersey. Patricia Campos Medina is the executive director of the Worker Institute at the School of Industrial Labor Relations at Cornell University. That's her day job. She's also the president of Latina Civic, which supports Latinas to run for office, and a long list of other organizations that are engaged in the political process across New Jersey. Thanks for joining us, Patricia.
Thank you for having me, Nancy.
And we're also joined by Mara Novak. She's the executive director of NJ 11th for Change, which helped defeat the most powerful New Jersey Republican in Congress in 2018. That's Rodney Frelinghuysen. The 11th congressional district is now represented by Democrat Mikey Sherrill. Welcome back to the show, Mara.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Nancy.
So, Mara, NJ 11th for Change has such a great origin story, right? People were upset over the election results in November 2016, and somebody said, hey, let's just get together to talk. And over the course of a couple of months, this informal get-together turned into an organization that had, what, something like 1,000 members in just, you know, in very short order? So tell me about those beginnings and your story about how you got involved.
Sure. I wasn't there right at the beginning. I was actually a member of another group, Blue Wave New Jersey, at the time. But after the election, we were all trying to figure out what to do. And NJ11, who a lot of my friends, NJ 11th for Change, a lot of my friends were members of it and were part of the founding group, got together in a coffee shop in New Jersey and decided they were inspired by something that Indivisible had suggested, which is to go and have town halls and also just start reaching out to their representatives. And we started trying to reach out to Rodney Frelinghuysen, and he would not talk to anyone. So after a few weeks, we started having hundreds of people coming for Fridays with Frelinghuysen, where we would have several hundred people standing in front of his office in Morristown and going up one or two at a time and giving him notes, sending him messages saying that we wanted him to be responsive, that we wanted him to listen to us, that we wanted him to meet with us. We have now in our Facebook group and on our newsletter, something between 6,000 and 7,000 members. So we started with zero.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I guess, important to note a little bit about Rodney Frelinghuysen, because, you know, maybe many New Yorkers won't be aware of the fact that he had served in Congress for a long time, Republican. His father had served in Congress, and he was a descendant of a blue blood family that had political involvement going back to the Revolution. And he had been a backbencher for years and years and years, and had just become chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which is one of the most powerful positions in Congress, right before Donald Trump is elected. So he was a particularly interesting character that your organization went after. And what was it that you, what did you want from Frelinghuysen?
Well, one of the things we wanted was for him to recognize that the district was a lot more progressive than Donald Trump's politics, for example. So the fact that he had now taken over this incredibly powerful chairmanship meant that he was going to have a lot of influence, and he had a reputation and had voted pretty moderately all along. He had contributed to Planned Parenthood. He was, he was pretty available to his constituents, but he wasn't meeting with anyone. Like, he didn't have town halls and things like that. So we were trying to get him to have town halls because we wanted to talk about our concerns. And our concerns, we focused on healthcare, on the ACA at the time. And we could not get him to respond, but we were putting a lot of pressure on him to say we wanted to support the ACA. We had a bus trip where we went down to, we did wind up finally getting him to agree to meet us in Washington. And the topics that when I was in the room with him, where we were talking about healthcare, I particularly asked him about abortion rights. And I'll never forget what he did, because he said, "Listen, my personal feelings about abortion are not important. You're not going to like how I'm going to vote because I have to vote with my caucus."
Right.
And that was a really critical moment for me in terms of understanding electoral politics.
It's so relevant to the current race going on in the 7th Congressional District, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But the fight between the Democratic incumbent Tom Malinowski and the Republican challenger Tom Kaine. And that's precisely what Malinowski is talking about, that Kaine it will not stand up to Republican leadership on abortion issues. But we'll get to that in a moment. So let's turn the conversation to Patricia Campos Medina. You bring a statewide perspective to this conversation. What were you up to at the time in 2016, at the time of the election, and how did the election of Donald Trump affect your work?
Well, back in 2016, we were focused and committed to figuring out how to help Hillary Clinton win the election, because I would say for Latinas, and for women of color in general, we knew what it will look like if Donald Trump won. We knew that his rhetoric of hate and attacking immigrants and the way he was talking about some of the progressive issues that we were talking about, we knew that that was not going to change. So we were deadly focused on trying to figure out how to get Hillary Clinton elected by doing the canvassing, the calling, the energizing people. So we were pretty devastated when she lost. And I remember the day after the election, going to drop my kids off to school. And I live in Hunterdon County. This is a very conservative area. And there were four suburban women, and a Latina, and there was an African-American neighbor. And the moment we saw each other at the bus stop, we just hugged each other and cried, because we knew what it was coming for our communities, because our communities have been in crisis for a long time. And we felt devastated. So, but we, I'm at heart an organizer. I come from the labor movement. I'm also an immigrant woman. So I've been taught, we've been taught, and I will say this is true also for African-American women, that, you know, we don't give up. We're organizers. We just organize. So we got back to, trying to figure out what is our take now. And remember, I tell people, this was not about because Hillary was a great candidate. But it was because Trump was going to be worse. And the next 4 years taught us that it was worse for our communities.
Yeah. Now, and, you know, something that sometimes goes unnoticed is the role that women of color play that is just, for years, been crucial to Democratic victories. The whole idea of this segment is we're talking about sort of the rise of the suburban political activism that happened in response to Trump. But I want to be mindful of the fact that really there were, Latina women and Black women very, very engaged in politics before Trump's election.
Exactly. I mean, that is the hidden weapon of Democrats, that Latina women and Democratic women did stay committed to the Democratic Party in 2016 and to Hillary Clinton. So we supported the Democratic Party in great numbers because we knew what the difference will be. So that's why after 2016, there was this resurgence of Latina women and women of color, Black women, who are the key of Democratic victory in the South, or driving the vote, the popular vote turnout for Democrats. They just started saying, well, we're going to run for office now. So one of the biggest accomplishments, I would say, if there was anything to celebrate after 2016, was that more Latinas and more Black women decided that they were going to run for office. And they took on that challenge. And we saw that in 2018. There was a great increase of women of color that ran for office and got elected. And that trend continues today. Because we shifted from just helping Democrats win elections to actually saying, I can run and win elections. That's an exciting part for me and my hat as president of Latina Civic, that we are demanding that more women of color actually get on the ticket to run for office, because our people, our voters get excited when they see people like them running for office. So this movement is not just about suburban women, and we think about suburban women mostly as white women living in the white picket fence homes. I mean, I live in one like that, but I'm focused more on working class women, Black and Latino, and even working class whites, who actually want more of a say on the politics after 2016.
Listeners, would you like to tell us about your experience getting involved in politics after the election of Donald Trump? Or maybe you've just recently got involved in your local congressional race for the upcoming midterms. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet us at Brian Lara. We have Mallory on the line from South Orange. Mallory, hi.
Hi there. Actually, it's Valerie. But,
oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you for taking my call. No worries. Thank you, Nancy, for taking my call. I am one of those women who got involved after the 2016 elections. We have a local organizing group called SOMA Action. We've actually collaborated with NJ11 for Change. And we started by protesting and trying to contain the damage of Trump after 2016's election. But then we evolved into a group that was quite organized in the 2018 midterms. And we were specifically supporting Mikey Sherrill, Andy Kim, and Tom Malinowski in the three congressional districts that actually flipped every one of them from Republican to Democrat in those 2018 midterms. So that was incredibly emboldening. To be sure, our group is both men and women, but I think women probably play an outsized role. And as we look at the upcoming midterms, we are back at it again with almost 250 people who are specifically signed up to work on these midterms. So we're focused on all three of those same elections, but we're really focused on Tom Malinowski. You mentioned him earlier, and his district has been impacted by the redistricting effort in New Jersey. So he is really at risk, even though he is an incredibly wise and effective legislator. So we are doing everything we can. And I guess the one thing I want to point out, I think women are particularly good at making social connections. And this boils down to talking to people, whether you're at a farmer's market or you're door-to-door canvassing or you're on the phone. It's not daunting, and I want to put a plug in for anybody out there who's concerned about the midterms. You can do it. Sign up if you're interested in working with us. Go to SomaAction, SOMAAction.org, and sign up to join us. You've got 40 days. You can make some phone calls, knock on doors. It's doable, and we've proven it is effective because we flipped three seats. So,
thanks, Valerie. So, Mara, what are you seeing, you know, right now on the ground in terms of the midterms? I mean, do you have the level of activism and enthusiasm for NJ 11th for Change that you were seeing in 2018?
I think it's very different. I'm also just going to say hi to Valerie because we do a lot of work with Soma Action, and now they are in the 11th district. So they, because of redistricting, which I know we're going to talk about later, but so yes, and they're an incredible group. And I think that things have changed. I mean, we had a very defined adversary in 2018 and in 2016 because we were working specifically against Trump. We were working specifically to unseat Rodney Frelinghuysen, and we succeeded. As you know, we in 2018, one of the best things that ever happened to me was being in the room on election night at Mikey Sherrill's victory party. Was extremely exciting because we had just put everything on the ground. We had hundreds of canvassers. There were canvassers coming from New York, from every part of New Jersey, from out of district, like Soma Action's canvassers. The energy was incredible, and it was a very focused energy. And then we won. And we have, you know, and we don't have that adversarial relationship with our congresswoman anymore. So getting people to say we have to go out and canvass, that we have to push. I mean, we have, it has been difficult. I think that now what happened after the Dobbs decision is we have, again, defined a lot of energy. I think that the midterms, people don't even understand the term midterms, but I think they're understanding. And I don't think that there's quite that they don't really understand exactly what's happening. But I think that people are understanding that we have to try to keep the House and we have to try to keep the Senate. So people are focusing on that. And so we're looking at the most vulnerable districts in our state. And obviously that Malinowski is the one that's the most at risk. I mean, we are continuing to canvass and support Mikey in lots of ways. We're also making sure that we get out the vote in New Jersey. So we're pushing vote by mail. We're pushing education just to make sure that we turn out every Democrat. But we have now endorsed in other races. So we're endorsing not just Mikey Sherrill, but also Andy Kim and Tom Malinowski. So that's something that we've expanded our focus outside of the 11th.
And Patricia, what are you seeing?
Yeah. Well, I agree with Mara that the difference in going towards the 2018 midterms was that we had a clear target to rally people about. And I mean, the threats were so real. I remember, you know, it was the children in cages for my community. It was the throwing of the paper towels to the victims of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. So it was like that real anger that people had that they felt like they needed to mobilize and make a statement in 2018. So that level of energy got us to 2018 and got us through getting Biden elected in 2020. So what we don't have right now is that clarity of the target, so that the enthusiasm that we had because we had an adversary that we needed to fix. It's not there. But there are real issues that working class women care about after the pandemic. And after in after the decision on the Supreme Court on the on women's right to choose, I think that that has fueled a more nuanced need to mobilize voters. And I think that when we talk about District Malinowski and CD7, we have to use those issues as a way to energize voters in a more nuanced way. My concern is that when we talk about mobilizing suburban women to vote in the Malinowski race, we are just single-handedly just talking about the issue of right to choose, as it's a real issue, and as working as a Latina woman, it matters to us. But there is nuance of how we talk to that with women of color, and specifically with Latina women, because the main driver of concern for working class women of color is actually the economic concerns and the impact that the pandemic had on their economic survival. And we have to have a message that addresses their economic concerns, specifically around childcare access. I was reading recently that childcare cost in New Jersey is about $12,000 a year. And in New York, sometimes it's higher than the cost of rent. So in order to have an in and energized working class women of color in City 7, and we're talking about communities like Rahway, like Linden, working class communities in Union County, you really have to have more than just this suburban white women message of the right to choose and the right. You really have to have an economic message and an economic hook to get these voters energized. So I think that I had this observation in last year for the gubernatorial election, just saying we don't have Trump and we need to continue voting because we don't want Trump back in the House. We don't want Republicans back in the House. It's not enough to give women of color a reason to get engaged. So I just urge, I urge the Malinowski campaign and urge the Democratic Party to actually get more nuance as when it comes to talking to women of color in City 7.
Okay, that's a really interesting point, Patricia. And we have a caller who's volunteering on the Malinowski campaign. We have Susanna in Westfield, New Jersey. Susanna, thanks for calling.
Hi. So it's very exciting to me to hear these interviews. In my town, after Trump was elected, I would say that up until that point, I thought that Westfield was a largely Republican town. And even though I'm a lifelong Democrat, I felt that I kind of had to keep a low profile. But after Trump's election, there was this groundswell of, frankly, outrage and fear. And all of a sudden, some key women in our town started to organize Democrats to mobilize not just against Trump, but to overthrow Leonard Lance, who had been our Republican congressman for 10 years in a seat that had been in Republican hands for 34 years, I think. And we were part of the contingent that mobilized for Tom Malinowski and helped get him to victory. What's interesting is that not only did we do that, but we also started to mobilize in our own town government. Our town government had, I believe, 8 Republican town council members and a Republican mayor. And in that first, the next election, we replaced the mayor with a Democratic mayor, and we replaced all 4 of the town council seats that were up for reelection with Democrats. And then the 2 years later, we replaced 3 of the remaining 4 town council seats. So the Democratic sleeping giant in our town has been awakened, and it has mobilized not just middle class or an upper class, you know, white women. It has mobilized our husbands, and it has mobilized our kids. There are a lot of teenagers who are volunteering for the Tom Malinowski campaign. In fact, I think they have something like 40 interns. I mean, it's crazy. And so I don't think that, you know, I realize that there isn't the same, you know, threat of Trump at the top. But I do think that there is a base of mobilization in this town, at least, that is not going away. And we are still canvassing. We are still writing postcards. We are still putting up our lawn signs. It's I think it's fundamentally changed a significant portion of our town, and the whole perception of who we are politically.
Thanks so much.
I think it's fantastic.
Thank you, Susanna. Let's stay with the 7th Congressional District and the Malinowski-Kane fight, because I wanted to just squeeze in before we go a little bit of information about redistricting. It's probably the biggest thing affecting the midterms that most people don't understand or pay attention to. All the congressional district maps in the country were redrawn in 2021, as happens every 10 years. In New Jersey, the biggest significant change really is to Malinowski's district. He ended up with 30,000 extra registered Republicans. But let me back up a little bit. Patricia, you fought to get Latina representation at the table for both, I believe, both the Congressional Redistricting and the State Reapportionment Committee. So just tell us, we don't have much time, but tell us a little bit about that battle.
Yes. You know, New Jersey has seen increase in population. We are Latinos at about 21% of the population. And our legislative representatives in New Jersey of Latino descent at about 9%. Those numbers get even lower when it comes to local races with less than 3-4%, I would think, in terms of the number of mayors and council people that we have elected. So we were very laser focused on Latina civic and making the point that we needed to increase the opportunity for Latinos to run for office, which gets determined in how the districts get formed. So that was a very difficult battle because in New Jersey, there is this tradition of protecting incumbents during the redistricting battle. And we wanted to see, in conjunction with the Latino Action Network, with a lot of different groups, we wanted to see a focus on making districts more representative of diversity. I think we got there. We got a little bit of diversity in some of the legislative races. We have yet to see how those turn out. But at the congressional level, we have an opportunity in the next 5-10 years to perhaps send another Latina to Congress. We never had a Latina from New Jersey go to Congress, so we are organizing laser focus that in the next 10 years will create the opportunity for a Latina to send to Congress, because representation matters. The 20% of Latinos in New Jersey need to see people like them running and legislating on their behalf. So I would say that we moved the needle forward in the legislative map, but we have not really moved the needle forward on the congressional map. So there's a lot of work to do. That's why we have launched a program that's called Latinas Building the Bench, which is going county by county and identifying Latinas who want to run for office and mentoring them at the local level so that we can build the bench for the next 10 years. I think we have a long-term plan to make changes. This redistricting session was not as successful in increasing representation for Latinos in New Jersey in general. But we will continue at the local level and building opportunities and supporting opportunities, because local candidates are essential for raising local issues, but also for advancing progressive issues, economic issues that matter to people locally, that gets them to vote. And at the end of the day, what people need to be energized to vote at the local level. And that's where organizations like me and Maras and people who are called Mara. Because it is local, when politics matter at the local level, then it turns into impact at the federal level for the Malinowski race. So one of my concerns is that at the congressional level, we always focus on voters that always vote, and congressional campaigns just focus on who always votes. So if we only do outreach to people who always vote, we're always going to get the same voters. And so we at Latina Civic are focused on how do we create new voters? How do we energize new people to participate so that we can create a new bench of voters that can change the dynamics of the politics at the federal level.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. My guests have been Patricia Campos Medina. In her day job, she's the executive director of the Worker Institute at the School of Industrial Labor Relations at Cornell University. And she's also the president of Latina Civic, which supports Latinas to run for office. And Mara Novak is the executive director of NJ 11th for Change. Patricia, Mara, thanks so much to both of you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
Thanks so much for having me.